I never felt like this before. Yes, I swear it's a truth, and I owe it all to you.
Cause I had the time of my life, and I owe it all to you.
I've been waiting for so long, now I finally found someone to stand by me.
Saw the writing on the wall as we felt this magical fantasy.
Now with passion in our eyes, there's no way we could disguise the secret me. So we take each other's hand, cause we seem to understand the urgency.
I think you got it from here.
Just remember.
Of your life here on Nightshade. Remember, the 2020 campaign is going to be crazier. The memes are going to be damper. There is going to be 20 candidates as opposed to two from the Democratic Party, each of them more insane and venal than the last. The Republicans had 17 last time, but out of them, how many of them were particularly memorable? You had Trump, you had Lion Ted, you had Jeb, Rand Paul, maybe. That's the list. Here you've got, I mean, a slew of loons trying to out-loon each other, whereas there, they were trying to... That's the thing. This is what the inversion is. I just realized this. With the Republican primary in 2016, you had one lunatic... And all the others are trying to say, we're the sane ones, let's stop the lunatic. But now, they're trying to out-lunatic each other. There is no sane person because no matter who it is compared to Trump, they're going to be sane. So it's going to be hilarity, and I'm ready for hilarity. What I'm not ready for is an extremely disturbing piece I saw today, and it's a segment that we like to call The Spin. Now, my buddy Kurt Schlichter, who's been a guest both here on Nightshade and on You're Welcome, and who is certainly worth a follow on Twitter if you haven't been doing so already, likes to say that the left wants you dead. And sometimes it seems like, you know, this is him exaggerating or this is him being provocative. And then I see articles like this, and one of the criticisms of... Ayn Rand and her novels is, one, obviously vampires aren't real, so they're not realistic, but two, that her villains are too caricatured, that people don't really act like this. And time again, you see incidents in real life that show that she, if anything, erred on the side of caution and moderated things, and this is one such article. This is from Out Magazine, and the headline is, Trump's plan to decriminalize homosexuality is an old racist tactic. Now, as you all know, without having read the article, back in the day, the racists, whether you're talking about the Klan in the 20th century or the slave owners in the 19th century, as well as northern racists, their big goal was to make sure homosexuality was legal. That's why Philadelphia was where the Constitution was written, because that's the city of brotherly love, by which they meant decriminalizing homosexuality. I'm going to read you this piece, and it is so disturbing. Here goes. This is how it starts. This is from Out Magazine. Out Magazine. The Trump administration is set to launch a global campaign to decriminalize homosexuality in dozens of nations where anti-gay laws are still in the books. Okay? And what I want you to do while I'm reading this is imagine this article had been about Obama. And why didn't Obama do this? While on its surface, the move looks like an atypically benevolent decision by the Trump administration, the details of the campaign belie a different story. Rather than actually being about helping queer people around the world, The campaign looks more like another instance of the right using queer people as a pawn to amass power and enact its own agenda. Let's talk about this for a second, using queer people to amass power and enact its own agenda. Who passed the Defense of Marriage Act, DOMA? Who was that? That was Bill Clinton, Democrat. When John Kerry in 2004 was running against George W. Bush for re-election, Bill Clinton's advice to him was, run against gay marriage. Hillary Clinton spoke frequently about marriage being between a man and a woman. Even Obama, who everyone knew was a closet gay rights, gay marriage supporter, was for civil unions, which was a silly compromise. But it's the right who uses queer people as pawns to amass power. If you are fundraising from gay people to get your legislative agenda across, whether it's a good or bad, you are using queer people as a pawn to amass power. That's what fundraising means. The question is whether you agree with the agenda or not, but both sides are clearly using this. Now, here we go. The most telling part of NBC News' report is that his plan centers homophobic violence in Iran, which NBC calls the administration's top geopolitical foe. I don't think Iran is the administration's top geopolitical foe. I think that would be China and maybe North Korea. But Iran's very clearly up there. Let's be fair. The plan has been reportedly spearheaded by U.S. Ambassador to Germany Richard Grenell, who is also the administration's top-ranked gay official, in response to news that a young gay man was hanged in Iran recently. Let me repeat this. This article is attacking Trump by pointing out that recently in Iran, a young gay man was lynched. And there's a problem that Trump is responding to a lynching for being gay in Iran. They are downplaying a literal lynching because Trump is going against it. The article goes on, Grenell has had his eyes on Iran for some time, and just a week ago, he was trying to get several European nations to pass sanctions on Iran, unrelated to the country's stance on homosexuality, to no avail. Why would a gay ambassador try to get, using diplomacy, try to get other nations to put economic pressure on a country where gay people are lynched? It must be due to racism. Homosexuality has been illegal in Iran since the 1979 Islamic Revolution. By at least, here's another one. I can't even read this. It's shocking. By at least one Guardian account, since the exit of President Ahmadinejad in 2013, enforcement of anti-gay laws has softened somewhat. You know, sure, it's against the law, but they don't really enforce it as much in the last 6 years. Can you imagine if someone said, yeah, Jim Crow is still in the books, but we don't enforce it half the time? This is an argument against Trump and for Iran. Yeah, they're on the listen, why would a gay person want to get gay laws taken off the books? They're not really enforced that much. Homosexuality, according to the writer, is an open secret. And most, this is also another one. I can't believe someone wrote this with a straight, pun intended, face. Homosexuality is an open secret, and most queer people fear homophobic reaction from fellow citizens more than the authorities. See, you're going to get the shit beat out of you by fellow citizens, not the cops. So the law doesn't matter. You're just going to get lynched by, like, your fellow people. It's not like the government's the problem here. Again, most queer people fear homophobic reaction from fellow citizens more than the authorities. So if you have a country where there's anti-gay legislation, which has been lessened somewhat, where a young man was recently lynched, and where the reaction, as bad as it is from the authorities, is even worse from the fellow citizens, somehow Trump is doing the wrong thing here by putting pressure on this country, and his ambassador is doing the wrong thing here. The laws have lessened. Guys, what do you want, them not to be lynching gay people? Come on. It's 2019. We know Trump, here's the quote, we know Trump is very focused on Iran and is looking for ways to demonize it. Can you imagine saying with a straight face to someone, you're only bringing up this lynching to try to demonize this country? Demonization isn't when the facts are so egregious that everyone who looks at it thinks, holy shit. That's not demonization. That's actually being a demon. We know Trump is very focused on Iran, is looking for ways to demonize it in the public opinion. The idea also that Trump's base are really give a shit about gay people in Iran is really amazing to me also. You know, so he kind of fumbled the football maybe with the wall. What do these like really crazy crypto Nazis care about? I know other countries and the gays in them. After the wall, that was number two on the list of the like Southern Republicans who voted for Trump. So wall, gays in Iran. This is one area where you know the U.S. and European countries see eye to eye in Iran. This is from Josh Lederman, who wrote the original NBC News story. He goes, it makes sense for them to focus strategically on that rather than sanctions, where there's a big gulf between the U.S. and its allies. Wait, you're saying that somehow by focusing on places where you might actually make a difference, this is a problem. So if you have an issue where you can stop people from being lynched and stop violence from their fellow citizens, and on this issue there's a big consensus from your allies, you shouldn't do it. Because racism. He goes, the truth is, this is part of an old colonialist handbook. In her essay, Can the Subaltern Speak? Post-colonial theorist, which means con artist, Gayatri Spivak coined the term white men saving brown men from brown men to describe the racist, paternalistic process by which colonizing powers would decry the way men in power treat oppressed groups like women to justify attacking them. Let me repeat this, the quote. White men saving brown men from brown men. So all the abolitionists in the North who fought the slave trade and who fought the slavery South, who were saving brown men from slave traders who were often black, that's a problem. Okay. You know what? If someone is getting lynched, a black person is getting lynched, and the person who saves them is still racist and is like, thinks blacks are inferior, wouldn't want their daughter to date one, if they get them down off the tree, that's fine. The point is, when you're dealing with people who are literally being murdered for who you are, for who they are, and their focus is on, well, what's your motivation here? Let's worry about not lynching people. Then we could focus on motivation. But I'm an extremist who's against lynching, so maybe I shouldn't be talking on this issue. Grinnell's attack might be a case of white men trying to save brown gay men from brown straight men to the same end. Right. First of all, Iranians don't consider themselves brown. They're Persian. And if you want to compare Iranians to black people, find someone who's Iranian and tell them that and see what happens to you. Here's a hint. It's not going to be a handshake. Tell them they're Arab. Don't even tell them they're black. Say, oh, you're from Iran? Oh, you're Arab. Uh-huh. This is what racism means in America. It's the stupidest look at race, where basically there's like three categories, white, Asian, and brown, and everyone who has skin color is vaguely the same is like put in the same box. And you go to India and Pakistan, who have nukes pointing at each other, oh, you guys are the same. What the it's the stupidest. It's embarrassingly stupid. There are several signs that this decision is denoted in a colonial sense of paternalism rather than any true altruism. Again, so when it's your team that does it, you're fighting for human rights. Remember when Hillary Clinton was in China and they play that clip all the time? Women's rights are human rights, women's rights are rights. When your team does it, you're fighting for the rights of people living dignity everywhere. When Trump's doing it, it's colonialism. Here's the thing. If you're going to say with a straight face, I'm fine with lynching because fighting it is an example of colonialist paternalism, you are an abomination. And you are not to be taken seriously, and you really are the enemy of the people. So I think that's enough of that, of this article, but this is the level that they've sunk to, where the guy is fucking downplaying lynching, saying the laws are loosened somewhat. How loosened, who knows? And that the people have to fear violence from their fellow citizens, so we should back off. That's where we are. This is absolutely fucking disgusting, despicable. But let's talk about something fun. So there's the there's a new segment I'm going to do. We don't have a name for it yet, which I don't know what you should call it. One of the things people often ask me on Twitter and in other forms of social media is there's all these new shows that are like the shows of the moment. And if I watch them to give a great brief review or to discuss it a little. And the one show that everyone's talking about right now, supposedly, is Russian Doll. And if you haven't heard of it, it's Natasha Lyonne, who is from Slums of Beverly Hills and a bunch of other movies, who is really... By the way, this has a 99% rating on Rotten Tomatoes, which doesn't necessarily mean it's good, but it certainly means something. The premise of the show, it's only 8 episodes long. It's on Netflix. It's perfect for binging. It's Groundhog Day. I mean, I'm just going to leave it like that. Like, basically, her character is in a loop and is reliving certain things. It is really New York in its sensibilities. It's fun as a New Yorker watching it because you can see exactly what streets they were filming on. There's one scene that's filmed in the Odessa Diner, which is someplace I've spent a good deal of time. Oh, I'm on this monitor now. It's just so weird. It's like looking. I feel like Natasha Lyonne, like in the Russian Doll thing. I'm like, I'm here, but I'm in the TV and I'm in that TV. So it's all kinds of weird stuff. It's superb. It's 8 episodes long. I love any show that is high concept. And what high concept means is there's a strong idea that's unusual driving the narrative. Friends, for example, is a low concept show. It's a bunch of friends hanging out. There's not much of an idea there, although the execution is superb. This is very high concept. It's a very out there idea. How they implement is good. I did not care for the ending at all. I didn't know what to make sense of it. I mean, it's not confusing. It's just like a little kind of ambiguous, and I'll leave it at that. But at the end of the day, an expression I absolutely hate, and I don't know why I just used, it's very much worth your time. It's quirky. If you like this show and spinning meteorites and all this other stuff, I am confident that you will at least enjoy. By the end of one episode, you know if you like it or not. And I think her character is really, really New York in a very fun way. So that is my... 2 cents on Russian Doll, and I don't know why they call it Russian Doll. It doesn't make sense to me. I mean, there's a few theories, but I'm not going to get into it. Okay. Just hours, a couple of days after shit hit the fan with Labour in the UK and me spitting on this mic for no reason, Theresa May, the Tory leader, has her own calamity. 3 members of her party have quit to join that new centrist group in Parliament, and they said that her handling of Brexit has been disastrous. These are pro-EU lawmakers, and they joined what that was so-called independent group, which had been founded by seven Labour members of Parliament just yesterday. It's likely to be a rebuke to her efforts to unite the party, obviously. The members are Anna Soubry, Sarah Wollaston, and Heidi Allen. I've never heard of any of them. And they announced their resignation and joint statement today. They said, "We no longer feel we can remain in the party of a government whose policies and priorities are so firmly in the grip of the ERG and the DUP," meaning the ERG is the pro-Brexit lawmakers in the Conservative Party, and the DUP is the Northern Irish Democratic Unionist Party. Those are the 10 seats who are giving her minority government the majority that they need to maintain a majority in Parliament. They said Brexit has redefined the Conservative Party, undoing all the efforts to modernize it. There has been a dismal failure to stand up to the hardline ERG, which operates openly as a party within a party. Yeah, I mean, if you're going to have an issue as earth-shattering as Brexit, of course you're going to have 2 different wings approaching it within each party. I can't think of any issue, for the most part, where you're not going to have, like, 2 big wings. Maybe abortion in the Republican Party is no real big pro-choice abortion people anymore because they got wiped out in 06 and 08. It operates openly as a party within a party with its own leader, whip, and policy. I mean, it's like the House. There's a Tea Party caucus in the House. There's the Congressional Black Caucus. This is not new in America, and I'm sure there's been many similar instances in the UK as well. In fact, Margaret Thatcher, during her cabinet, she had what they called the Dries and the Wets, which were the pro-Thatcher people and the anti-Thatcher people. This has been part and parcel of parliamentary politics for a very long time. They go, it comes as a time of heightened political tension in Britain. There's less than 6 weeks to go. 6 weeks. Before Britain is scheduled to leave the EU, Britain is the world's fifth largest economy. Theresa May, pictured here, said, I'm saddened by this decision. These are people who have dedicated service in our party over many years, and I thank them for it. She says, I'm determined that under my leadership, the Conservative Party will always offer the decent, moderate, and patriotic politics that the people of this country deserve. So the departure of these three leaves her with an even more precarious majority at a time when she's hoping to win support for her deal over the coming weeks. Last month, as I've covered in the show, her proposed agreement was overwhelmingly rejected by both anti-EU and pro-EU people. And she's going to hold fresh talks with the EU later today with a plan to secure legal assurances over the nature of that Irish border after Brexit. She's looking to renegotiate the backstop, which is basically an insurance policy designed to prevent the return of customs checks on the border between Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland, which would still be part of the EU, Northern Ireland being part of the UK. She's expected to request legally binding concessions that the backstop would not permanently bind the UK into a customs union. And ahead of the talks, Jean-Claude Juncker, who's the European Commission president, said he did not anticipate a breakthrough. So shit's really falling apart there as well. So that's what, 7 plus 3, that's 10 people. The Liberal Democrats have 11 seats, I believe, in the House, in Parliament. So they're already kind of being like the third biggest party. So this is hilarious. And here's some big news. Here's some really, 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 really big news. They're taking on the corporate press. That high school kid from Covington, he sued the Washington Post for defamation yesterday, claiming the newspaper falsely accused him of racist acts and of instigating a confrontation with that Native American activist, Nathan Phillips, in a January incident at the Lincoln Memorial. It was filed in district court by Covington Catholic High School, Nicholas Sandman. He's 16. He's asking for $250 million in damages. That's how much Jeff Bezos, founder of Amazon and the world's richest person, paid for the Post in 2013. That's funny. Good work. I like that one. He died, by the way, that dad who said that originally. The lawsuit claims that the newspaper wrongfully targeted and bullied the teen to advance its bias against President Trump because he's a white Catholic who wore a MAGA cap on a school trip to the March for Life anti-abortion rally on January 18th. The Post Vice President for Communications, Christine Connaughty Kelly, said, "We are reviewing a copy of the lawsuit and we plan to mount a vigorous defense." In a photo that went viral, that photo right there. The mic?
Yeah, it's being weird.
Is it good now?
Yeah, nice.
Okay. Now they can hear my shit takes and my sick burns. In a photo that went viral, that photo right there, from the incident, he's seen standing face-to-face with Nathan Phillips, and he stares smiling at him while Phillips sings and plays his drum. In a statement, his lawyer, Lynn Wood, said additional lawsuits would be filed in the weeks ahead. They had, as I covered on the show, they had threatened to file people at sue people like Kathy Griffin, Anna Navarro, Alyssa Milano. This is interesting because I've always said there's a book called The Goal, which describes it, which it seems so obvious at the time, but apparently a lot of people didn't think in those terms. The point of the book is, what's the goal of a business? And he goes through it, and spoiler alert, the goal is to make money. And how the author goes through it is, if you look at your business and you're starting from concept to delivery of product and getting your money, there's different steps along the way. So as you look at the process, figure out which is the one step in the process that screws things up for you the most. Fix that. That's the bottleneck. And then there's going to be a new bottleneck. And then you fix that one, then something else is going to be the worst. By definition, something will always be the worst because it's a relative term. Same thing here. It's like, okay, they're going to be deplatforming people. They're going to be banning people from PayPal. Right, there's going to be a hindrance. But then there's going to be the counterattack, and that's this. which is the left thought, okay, we're going to get rid of people. They're going to be silenced. Oh, shit, now we're getting hit with lawsuits. So this is a whole other front. And I guess the goal is not the good metaphor here, but the point is it's never a straight line. And this is a big, in the same way that a lot of people, this is the metaphor, in the same way that a lot of people on social media have been censoring for fear of being banned, because Twitter suspends you, they don't give you a reason, and it's often arbitrary and it's asymmetric, because all the people who have been banned, we think with one exception, have been on the right. So people are like, is this going to get me banned? Is this a joke? Da, da, da. If I say learn to code, I asked people to tweet at me, learn to code, and they did, and they got suspended. So there's no context even there. So it's like, all right, now, just from this huge lawsuit, $250 million lawsuit's no joke, now they're going to have to start self-censoring. Maybe the press, or maybe individuals like Kathy Griffin, or maybe both. Who knows? But there's something that's going to be in their heads. So a PI firm retained by Covington Diocese found in a report released last week no evidence the teenagers provoked a confrontation. I love the fact that this shit's all on video from 360 degrees, and they call like a PI. Hey Magnum, can you get to the bottom of this? Okay. Doop, doop, doop. Yeah, the kids didn't do shit. All right, roger that. The fuck a PI? Wait, they're going through the garbage? The investigation also determined that the students did not direct any racist or offensive comments toward Phillips, although several performed a tomahawk chop to the beat of his drum. So that's kind of cultures learning from each other. He also claimed in a separate video that he heard them chanting, build that wall, a reference to Trump's pledge to build that wall, of course. But they found no evidence of such a chant, and he did not respond to multiple attempts to contact him. I'm going to be covering this story very heavily in the weeks to come. This is insane stuff. This is totally unprecedented in many ways. No, there was legal action against the SPLC, and they settled. Gavin's lawsuit as well against the SPLC. But this is the Washington Post. They're not even they're claiming to be objective. And if there's other lawsuits coming, who the hell knows what's going to happen? Finally, we're running short on time, but Meghan McCain has been very good in The View in hitting the hard questions. And she hit Tulsi Gabbard with all the things that she's been being accused of to her face, and gave Tulsi, a presidential candidate and representative from Hawaii, a chance to respond. This is very worth a watch. Let's watch this.
Serve our interests and our security.
Congresswoman, first, thank you for your service, which is something I say to everyone who has served that comes on the show, and I think it's important. That being said, my understanding is you know how I feel about your stance on foreign policy. And when I hear the name Tulsi Gabbard, I think of a Assad apologist. I think of someone who comes back to the United States and is spouting propaganda from Syria. You have said that the Syrian President Assad is not the enemy of the United States, yet he's used chemical weapons against his own people 300 times. That was a red line with President Obama. That is not our enemy. 13 million Syrians have been displaced. So when you say regime change is hurtful for the country, but gassing children isn't more hurtful, it's hard for me to understand where you come from a humanitarian standpoint if you were to become president.
You're putting words in my mouth that I've never said.
You did not say that Syrian President Assad is not the enemy of the United States. Say it now. Clarify.
The issue here is how can we help alleviate the suffering of people.
Just really one moment. Is he an enemy of the United States?
An enemy of the United States is someone who threatens our safety and our security. There is no disputing the fact.
What's great is she didn't dodge it. Watch this. But basically she's saying, just because someone's evil doesn't mean they're our enemy, personally. Go ahead.
Assad in Syria is a brutal dictator. There is no disputing the fact that he has used chemical weapons and other weapons against his people. There are other terrorist groups in Syria who have used similar chemical weapons and other weapons of terror against the people of Syria. This is an unfortunate thing that wrenches at every one of our hearts. This is not something I'm disputing, nor am I apologizing or defending these actions. My point is that the reality we are facing here is that since the United States started waging a covert regime change war in Syria starting in 2011, the lives of the Syrian people have not been improved. Their well-being has not gotten to a better place. Their suffering has not decreased. It has increased. In addition to the fact
that
Al-Qaeda is stronger in Syria today than ever before. So not only are we dealing with the fact that this regime change war we've been waging in Syria has not helped the Syrian people, it has made their lives worse off.
Bashar al-Assad has also
undermined our national security, leaving us in a place where Al-Qaeda is a stronger threat there than they ever have been before.
I love that shit. And she's going to be amazing in debates because, and as many people are saying this, this is going to be like when Ron Paul's in debates. When someone says something at first, it sounds ridiculous, but then you give them a chance to explain it. If they sound at all, even if they're wrong, but they sound reasonable, all of a sudden, like, people get traction. So I don't think she's going to get anywhere in the political process, but she's going to be one to watch, especially on social media, because a lot of people think she's pretty interesting, both on the right and on the left. And on that note, just think of Tulsi Gabbard and maybe you will have some sweet dreams.